Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. What does it take to create a truly equitable healthcare system? From entrepreneurs to investors to community workers from across the globe, this season we're speaking to the people aligning capital and technology to find the answer. This episode is produced in partnership with the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation as part of a series investigating the trends, challenges, and opportunities in the global healthcare sector. My guest today is Dr. Betty Mirembe, Country Director of Mothers to Mothers Uganda. Mothers to Mothers is an African NGO that unlocks the potential for women to create healthy families and eliminate pediatric AIDS. Betty is a medical doctor with postgraduate training in public health. She heads Mothers to Mothers work in Uganda, heading up a team of about 100 women living with HIV who work as frontline health workers in the East Central region. Betty is speaking to me today from Jinja, Uganda, famous as the historic source of the River Nile. The city is home to diverse wildlife, and for that reason, you may hear sounds from local animals and birds in the background of our conversation. In recent months, her responsibilities have included rapidly adapting work to include services and information to combat the COVID-19 pandemic and pivoting to make increased use of mobile health tools. Betty has over 18 years of medical field experience, 15 of which have been in the implementation of diverse programs in Uganda, including HIV/AIDS care and treatment. Prior to joining Mothers to Mothers, Betty held diverse roles at organizations including the Clinton Health Access Initiative and the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundations. She's a passionate advocate for health equity and gender equality, and we couldn't be more delighted to have her join the show today. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you, Paul.
So can you tell us a little bit more about Mothers to Mothers? What challenge was it founded to solve?
Thank you, Paul, for the question. Mothers to Mothers is an African-born and bred not-for-profit. It employs women living with HIV as frontline health workers, and they are called mentor mothers. Probably people have seen that term in many places. The organization was founded in 2001 in South Africa, and at the time there was a huge problem with mother-to-child transmission of HIV. Mandatory HIV testing had been introduced for all pregnant women. And one of our founders found out that many mothers, when they would come and were diagnosed with HIV at these clinics, they were never able to come back. They were not returning to care. Our founder is a medical doctor, and he was working with colleagues at one of the South African busiest hospitals, and they noticed this over a period of time. It was a significant challenge because we know and we knew then that with the right care and treatment, the risk of passing on the virus from mother to child can almost be eliminated. But without the treatment, data from WHO shows that up to 45% of mothers will pass the virus on to their children during pregnancy, birth, or breastfeeding. And in order to tackle this challenge, the mentor mother model was created. It's basically a model that employs a woman living with HIV who has gone through and walked through the path of giving birth to an HIV-free child to deliver health services, education, and support for other women. And from that time up until now, it's been proven to work. From those early days in 2001 when it started in South Africa, it's now grown to work across 10 countries. Currently, Mothers to Mothers employs 1,700 women living with HIV as frontline health workers and reaches over 1 million people with health services and education each year. Since 2001, Mothers to Mothers has reached over 11 million women and children under 2 years, and overall it has created 11,000 jobs along the way. Most importantly, I think we have achieved what the UN calls virtual elimination of mother-to-child transmission, a rate below 5% for all our enrolled clients for the past 6 years. In 2019 alone, that rate for M2M clients was about 1.9. So we've taken this simple yet effective model into many related service areas with a mission to create healthy, thriving families and to bring an end to pediatric AIDS.
Extraordinary work. And I guess I wanted to ask, what is it about your mentor mother model that makes it so specifically effective?
The mentor mother model has a couple of what I call characteristics, but they're really strong to how it works and how and why it's been successful. And it's been effective for mainly a few reasons that I will just elaborate below. It's a peer-based model. And because of that, the services are delivered by women who are living within those same communities as the ones they serve. Wherever we go as mothers to work, we will always and we always identify mothers within those catchment populations or communities that have gone through a particular program that we are implementing. I think we all are aware that in each and every community you go, you'll find someone, you'll find a mother, you'll find a caretaker, you'll find someone that has gone through that program and been and received successful results. And those are the mothers that we pick on. We strongly also believe in making this professional and paying our staff fairly. This isn't true in many organizations who sometimes and many times see peer workers like the ones we have as cheap resources who will work for a small stipend and not be paid or remunerated accordingly. But we think as mothers to mothers that this is unethical and ineffective because we are asking women to do a real job and one of the most difficult and challenging jobs in the world. We are also asking them to work alongside health workers, be there present every single day, but also be around people's homes providing education and support as mothers go through different challenging circumstances. And we've seen that because of this, these mothers need to be fairly paid for it. And this payment makes them even more effective at their job. They feel recognized and they feel that their contribution is critical and important. And so because of that, we've seen amazing health outcomes for our work. And we are proud of the fact that since we started, as I mentioned earlier, 11,000 jobs for women living with HIV have been created overall in all the countries. At the moment, we currently have about 1,700 frontline staff, and Uganda particularly has 100 staff doing that kind of work. The other fact that has really allowed us or enabled us to succeed is that this model is designed to create long-term relationships with the families we serve. These mothers are living within those particular communities and are able to identify with everyone that's going through similar situations. They are able to develop relationships, and we've seen them being able to support clients to access health services, start on treatment, and stay in care. This is vital for HIV, where long-term adherence to treatment keeps moms healthy and babies alive, but it's also important for a range of other medical conditions, conditions like TB, conditions like diabetes, and even other non-communicable diseases, and now even COVID-19. So we do this by having our teams both based in the health centers and working door to door in local communities. And we have also specially designed apps that allow us to follow up with our clients effectively, to remind them of appointments and to get them back into care if they miss an appointment. This may sound simple and easy to do, but we have seen that if, as we've done it in many countries and taken it in different disease areas, we've been able to see results. We've been able to see services that are designed and delivered by the communities they aim to serve and supported by technology with an eye on broader impacts like gender equality and economic opportunity. So those, I think, allow us to really achieve and keep achieving and also remain effective even beyond the HIV field.
It's amazing how community-driven and how comprehensive and how effective this strategy is. And I want to talk about how it might be applied in other contexts a little later. But I want to just ask you about adolescent girls and young women who we know are particularly at risk of contracting HIV. And can you tell us how Mothers to Mothers attempts to lend support to these specific vulnerable groups?
The adolescent girls and young women are a particular group that is highly at risk, but that's also very important to our future as different countries. And so it's important that we actually pay attention to them. They are surrounded by a lot of factors that actually predispose them not only to HIV, but we see in Uganda and even in a number of sub-Saharan Africa countries, teen pregnancies and a lot of issues that are being faced by this group, as we will see. They are faced by lack of education, poverty, cultural norms, and unequal gender relations. These actually complicate their lives significantly. And we know that because of that, the girls are not able to stand up for their demands and their rights. And the results of such scenarios are very devastating. In sub-Saharan Africa, 5 in 6 new infections among adolescents aged 15 to 9 years are among girls. And this speaks to the fact that the girls are actually more vulnerable. But we've also seen that young women aged 15 to 24 years are twice as likely to be living with HIV than men. And as I mentioned earlier, that the mentor mothers started with caring for themselves, but because of how far we've gone with the HIV epidemic, we see that some of the children that survived, some of the children of these mentor mothers have actually grown into teenagers and are now young women. And we began to see these challenges grow in across all our programs. So as Mothers to Mothers, we started and knew that it was time for us to respond by tailoring our services directly to these young women. Yes, we were successful in the beginning in preventing them from getting HIV, but they are now faced with a different challenge and we need to be able to respond. So in Uganda, this is being implemented through a program called Girls for Change. And in this program, we make sure that the team that deliver the services are young themselves. We pick young women, we pick some adolescents, and train them to become adolescent mentor mothers. It is largely in line with our peer-based approach. And also, as anyone who's worked with adolescents knows, you can't get through to them if they think you are older and over the hill. They always are very open to people that are within their age groups, people they think will not be judgmental, but people will offer them a listening ear. So this means that we can always create a safe space for relevant, difficult conversations with these adolescent mentor mothers. And we can also work where these young women are. We've all seen and we are all aware that in many countries, a lot of our programs are situated at facilities. They're situated at health centers. They're situated at hospitals. But adolescents will not easily get into these places unless they have a critical reason. So one of the things we've done is to take these programs where the young women and adolescents are. We've taken the programs to schools. We've taken them to youth clubs, churches, so that we are able to meet them where they are. We've also made sure through this program that the facilities are made youth friendly. And we've done this through being able to place the adolescent peer mentor stationed at health facilities and serving at different entry points so that when the adolescents come to seek a service, they can see a friendly face of adolescents in the clinic and they can somehow feel at home and are able to navigate through some of the complex service delivery processes that they have to go through at facilities.
So in addition to this remarkable work that you're doing on the health front, you're also partnering with Cartier Philanthropy to pilot a microfinance program for women who don't have easy access to banking services. Tell me, why have you decided to expand your work outside the kind of broad health remit to support women becoming more financially independent?
We've noted, and a lot of the programs that we've done have come through the lessons that we've learned as we've worked with these women. So for nearly the two decades that we have worked, as I mentioned, we have witnessed the power of women whom we employ and train as community health workers. We've supported them, and we've also seen them support other women and families to access essential health services. We've also seen that when we invest in women, they in turn invest in themselves and their families to build a better future. In addition to also investing in their communities, they become a key resource in their communities. But we've also learned that over the years, maybe when programs end, or at some point within the course of our work, some of them have to move on to something else. And so we noticed that at that point, a lot of issues started to arise. They would wonder that if I'm leaving this day job, what am I going to do? Am I going back to the community to be like how I was in the past? And so we started to think about innovative ways of bringing them together to be able to save money and also access loans for them to start income-generating activities. Employment creates important economic empowerment opportunities for these mentor mothers, and it helps them to address gender inequalities that can make African women more vulnerable to HIV and other health issues. But it also helps and enables mentor mothers to provide for their families, build homes, and pay for their children's school fees, creating better opportunities in life. So in line with that, in Uganda, knowing that while they are employed, they can earn a salary, we brought them together to form what is called a Village Savings and Loans Association, or a VSLA. This Village Savings and Loans Association allows mentor mothers to come together with other women within their communities and begin to save. And these savings, they save money, and these savings are used to provide loans amongst the women so that they can start small businesses and generate income. Mentor mothers have gone as far as opening their own grocery stores that sell basic household goods in the community, to farming and other livestock rearing businesses. We have seen that ever since this was introduced, when mentor mothers get to that point and they want to move on and start doing something else, they are eagerly looking to doing that because they have something set aside. So we know that if they've been able to achieve health, they've been able to support their families to get to a good level of sustainability, when they leave this work or when they want to move on and do something else, there is an income-generating activity that they can keep doing and allow their lives to continue being meaningful and also impactful for their communities where they stay.
So, Betty, you mentioned that Mothers to Mothers now works in 10 countries across Africa. And I'd like to ask about your approach to scaling and how you've sought to replicate the work of Mothers to Mothers in other countries, because it seems that it's such an enormously valuable service to be able to offer to people.
I think one of the key things is scale and adaptation. And within the M2M programs, we've really come across a few or a number of things that have allowed us to be able to scale and adapt to new areas and new regions. And one of them is that the fact that this is a very simple model that's also scalable. And one of the reasons why it can actually be done in many places is that in each and every place you go and are implementing a program, you'll always find a woman that has gone through that program. As an organization, we also believe in very strong partnerships with host governments and communities. And that's why we always consult with local communities before we open. And as I mentioned earlier, we hire our teams from those communities. And that allows us to adapt all our programming to the local realities. In Uganda, as in a number of African countries, polygamy is still a very common and accepted practice. And so we provide advice on the impact of this on HIV, on the HIV diagnosis in one wife, on the others in the family and how disclosure and encouragement of the entire family to seek care will actually be critical for them moving forward. Simplicity, the fact that we use the women that are within those communities, our partnerships with host governments and host ministries of health, as well as partnering with other organizations that are already implementing programs in those places, have allowed us to keep scaling and going into new places. Another thing that allows us to be able to scale is our focus on data and technology, which means that we can rapidly tell what's working and what's not and adapt as needed in each and every program.
What impact does Mothers to Mothers want to have in the communities where you work, and how do you measure that? What successes are you most proud of so far?
As an organization, we want to see families thrive, not just survive. As Mothers to Mothers, that's key to us, that families everywhere we work will thrive and not just survive. And that means that we have to make some health impacts, of course, but also the broader social impacts are critical and important to us, that women having great access to employment, economic opportunities, and we are also able to reduce the gender inequalities. I will mention a few metrics that we look at routinely in all our programs, but some of them have actually been able to show us our levels of success. One of the first metrics that we look at is the virtual elimination of mother-to-child transmission. And for 6 years in a row, we have been able to achieve this for all mothers programs. And as I mentioned earlier at the beginning, we've been able to achieve the UN target, which is below 5% within our group of women that are part of the M2M programs. Another key metric that has been very encouraging to us is seeing that 94% of our clients living with HIV who started antiretroviral treatment as part of our programs still remain alive and in care after a year or after 12 months of treatment, compared to 75% of those that are in all the other countries. So the metric that I've shared, the 94% is specifically to the group of clients that are served by Mothers to Mothers, but the figure across sub-Saharan Africa, the number or the proportion of clients that are still alive and in care at the 12-month mark is 75%. So for us, that's a key finding, and it allows us and also keeps us driving more and more to ensure that these programs can actually be scaled to more places than where we are currently. The other metric that has been critical for us is the 11,000 jobs that have been created through this work. They have helped us and helped to change the narrative of what it means to be an African woman living with HIV. Prior to the start of the Mentor Mother program, and I think if some people would have the chance to listen to some of our spokeswomen, a diagnosis of HIV meant an end to everything for them and for their families. But we have seen that through the employment, through engaging in this work and being able to support their families and being able to support themselves, we have seen them sort of have a new leap to life and a new focus. And we think that's commendable. And we are looking forward to being able to provide these jobs to more and more women across the continent as we continue to work.
So even before the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a 4.2 million person shortage in health workers across sub-Saharan Africa alone. And I know this is something that Mothers to Mothers has been working to change. Tell us a little bit more about how you've pivoted your strategy to respond to and deal with the pandemic.
Shortage in health workers across sub-Saharan Africa, I think for me, is one of the greatest challenges to countries and programs being able to achieve. And I think as people that are involved in healthcare, there are a lot of targets that we set, but we see that the part around health worker shortages is one that many programming teams have been trying to avoid. So as Mothers to Mothers, we think that this is critical, and we've been working to change this and ensure that the health worker force is strengthened, improved, and able to deliver the task. So we've been able to do this through the Mentor Mother program, and we have had them designated as essential workers by government. This is proof of their contribution, providing an additional layer of care and support in communities. Our mentor mothers make sure that women and families get educated about COVID-19, specifically in this time, and they can be referred for testing or treatment. And another critical, crucial issue here is that they are also ensuring that services in areas like HIV and maternal health are not forgotten along the way. As has been seen in many countries, when this pandemic hit, it seemed as if all the other diseases were forgotten. And that has been the case in HIV, it has been the case in maternal health. So the mentor mothers have held that link and tried to ensure that the gains we've all made on HIV and maternal health are not lost. UNAIDS has estimated that an additional 500,000 people could die as a result of the HIV service disruptions during COVID. So this is vital that we continue to focus on these programs and do not lose the gains that we have been able to make over the years. M2M's approach has been twofold: to adapt and to protect. We've adapted the way we work. We've altered or reduced face-to-face services. We've also pivoted to e-services more. I think we are all aware with COVID-19, the transmission rates are very worrying and challenging. So we needed to come up with ways that we can continue to deliver services in a way that can actually protect the mentor mothers themselves and also the communities in which they live. And that's how our e-services were brought on board. And they have allowed us to reimagine how we can reach and serve clients using tools such as WhatsApp and phone calls to engage clients more where possible. We've also strengthened the information flow, and this allows us to ensure that the right information is circulated and gets to the people who don't have phones and to those who haven't yet disclosed. We've also taken steps to protect mentor mothers and their clients and prevent or lower the risk of COVID-19 infections. And this was done through the implementation of measures to promote social distancing, but also equipping them, our frontline staff, with PPE. We know that the COVID-19 pandemic is evolving, and there are probably faces we have not seen. But as mothers to mothers, we are always trying to see what else can be done. How can we do it differently in this pandemic to ensure that the communities where we serve are continually protected from COVID-19, but also they have access to information on how they can protect themselves? And in addition to that, we also are constantly thinking around how we can continue to keep the gains that we have registered under the HIV programs. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the key things we did was to change a little bit about the way we work. Some of them involved doing deliveries of drugs or medicines to clients at their homes so they could continue treatment when transport wasn't available. And so a couple of changes have been initiated, but we are also continually open to seeing that we can make more changes to ensure that the women and the clients they serve can continually be served through this pandemic.
This is such an impressive account of agility and adaptation. I want to ask you, it's often said that, particularly in Africa, the widespread adoption of mobile phones has allowed or could allow or create the potential to allow communities to sort of leapfrog ahead in technology adoption and enable communities to respond to challenges in a much more nimble way than one would otherwise anticipate. And I guess I'd like to ask you, have you found that your ability to pivot, to be able to deploy e-services, to be able to circumvent the kind of in-person trainings or interactions that you would previously done, has that really been enabled by this leapfrog adaptation of mobile technology in communities where you work?
Yes, it has significantly helped. And as I mentioned earlier, and probably as most of us have seen, COVID-19 presented a challenge to the health sector in a way that probably hasn't been seen in a very long time. I think other than the Ebola outbreaks or any of those kind of scenarios, we've never had a situation where everyone almost couldn't move. And I think the lockdown initiatives and guidelines were really stringent in many places. So in an organization like Mothers to Mothers, where we want to continue and desire to continue providing services, we needed to really think fast and quick around how we could be able to keep going. So we were fortunate that we were not starting from zero. With the support of Johnson & Johnson, we have been investing in our digital health programs for many years as an organization. Our mentor mothers were already equipped with smartphones and tablets to efficiently and effectively track and follow up with our clients and improve our increasingly complex service delivery models. So we quickly built upon our electronic client appointment diary, which is structured like a normal calendar-based diary. The mobile app allows mentor mothers based at health facilities to track client information and appointments and to make sure that they showed up, or if they were not able to show up due to transportation restrictions, medicines were delivered at their homes to be able to allow them continue treatment. Women who missed appointments were also followed up through text messages, phone calls, and home visits by the community mentor mothers who were fortunately allowed to continue working, and our cars and project cars were allowed to continue moving even during this pandemic, as they were deemed to be providing crucial essential services. So during COVID-19, we pivoted to use this diary, as I mentioned, as a service delivery tool. Instead of preparing for face-to-face appointments, it was used to deliver services by phone. So we were able to create structured, scripted calls with our clients with a frequency change depending on the risk profile to make sure that we kept people in care and also adherent during COVID-19, while also delivering COVID-19 education and information. So to achieve this, we had to embark on a very rapid training. We were able to train all our 1,700 frontline staff in a matter of weeks, and this happened during the month of April. And then from that time until June, we have reached nearly 70,000 people with these calls, messages, and follow-up initiatives. We are really sure that we would not have been able to achieve this if we hadn't pivoted so quickly, and then probably if we hadn't worked on this before the time that COVID-19 hit. And in addition to the structured calls supported by the app, as I mentioned, we have also developed a chatbot on WhatsApp that's called the Virtual Mentor Mother Platform, or VMMP. The VMMP augments and improves our existing service range. It's an on-demand tool that allows clients to access the health information they need from a trusted source when they want it, and in a format that can be easily shared with friends and family. This type of tool is also very useful for adolescents. So in phase one, which is live now, we have translated COVID-19 content from the World Health Organization into over 30 languages and rolled this out across 9 countries. In phase two, the content on wider health areas such as HIV prevention and treatment, maternal health, and the early child development will be added to the chatbot. This project, already in the works prior to COVID-19 outbreak, will take M2M further on its journey for technology-enabled service delivery to ensure universal health coverage for as many clients as possible. It's also important and critical to say here that we know that this isn't a silver bullet. It's an additional element to our service mix, which will also become an additional resource during COVID-19 and beyond. One that allows mentor mothers to offer to clients information so that they can also receive vital health information at a time that suits them and in a way that's easy for them to share with their families. We must not hear that it's been an exciting path for us. It's been an exciting journey and we're looking forward to going forward. And we're also working with governments to make it possible for more people to access mobile phones and then also be able to have access to this information as much as possible.
So wildly effective organizations often partner with others in order to expand their reach and their impact. Can you tell us a little bit about how you at Mothers to Mothers have approached partnerships?
Partnerships have been critical to our journey, and they will continue to be critical to our journey. I know that as an organization, we've only made it this far because of the strong partnerships that we have held and are even looking forward to continue further on with strong partnerships as we have been doing in the past. And these are with companies and other charities and governments. Johnson & Johnson, for instance, has been one of our longest-standing corporate partners, and it has supported Mothers to Mothers since 2005. And in addition to the financial resources they have provided through the partnerships, they have also provided technical expertise in areas such as digital health. And through their secondment programs, we've also been able to have human resources embedded within M2M to help on key projects and in areas where skills are scarce or hard to find for such charities like ourselves. So one of our key focus points over the next couple of years is that we will increase these partnerships. And a large part of M2M's focus is on the so-called technical assistance services, where we also help governments and other NGOs to use our model. We also just don't want to attract partnerships onto ourselves. We also want to be a trusted and also a very valuable partner, not only to governments, but also to other organizations that are working within the areas where we work and in the countries where we work. So, for example, in Kenya in 2012, one of our models, the Mentor Mother model, was adopted as a national policy. And the M2M program in Kenya worked to support the Ministry of Health in Kenya roll it out across the country. So by working closely with the Ministry of Health in that partnership and with funding from USAID and Comic Relief, M2M helped devise the relevant policy and then prepared and introduced the Kenya Mentor Mother program nationwide over a five-year period. This process included intense training and equipping more than 20 organizations to establish and manage the program, from large international non-government organizations to small faith-based groups. And by August 2018, the Kenyan government, with funding from the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria, had expanded this Mentor Mother program to all the 47 countries. As Mothers to Mothers, we undertook a similar project in South Africa from 2012-2017 and are currently on a similar path in Mozambique, Angola, and Tanzania. The desire for Mothers to Mothers is that in each and every country where we work, we will only not be able to implement the program successfully, but we will also work with the host governments to do similar processes of scaling up the program across the entire country. And we know that with that, we are able to leave a lasting impact and be able to continue and allow communities to continue delivering the services appropriately.
So Betty, your work takes you to communities that have low resources, multiple health challenges, conditions of relative hardship. And when you encounter that on a daily basis, what is it that gives you hope? What is it that gives you the energy and the passion and the enthusiasm which you so clearly have to continue the fight?
As you rightly said, we encounter a lot of things, and I encounter a lot of things in the day-to-day work. And as you rightly said, it's very possible and often happens, and you begin to think that probably some of the challenges that we face have been here long enough. But one of the things that keeps us going, or what keeps me hopeful and also allows me to send that hope to my team, is the achievements that we register. For me, they are a testimony, they are a message, a strong message saying that it is possible. It's possible if we work diligently, if we work consistently, and if we keep committed to working as well as we have been working. The data that I shared, the fact that we've been able to achieve the virtual elimination among our clients, pushes me harder to see that if we've been able to achieve it within the cohort of mothers that we have worked with in our programs, we can be able to achieve that even like for Uganda, if our programs are able to cover many more regions in the country. And the other thing that keeps giving me hope is that there are like-minded partners in each and every area we work. And that allows me to know that we probably are not going it alone. There are other organizations that will still come with us. They believe in us and they believe in what we do, and we are all working towards the same cause. So if we keep persisting, if we keep focusing, if we keep implementing the strong programs that we desire and have implemented, I'm sure we will achieve. And that keeps me hopeful and going.
So if someone listens to our conversation, says that is extraordinarily inspiring, I want to build a career, I want to make a positive impact in the healthcare sector, what advice would you give to them? How would they go about doing that?
I must say that if someone wants to have impact, if someone wants to have reach, if someone wants to change lives, not only for that day, but for generations to come, I think health is one space to get involved in. And I would strongly encourage them to do that. Because in many of the places where we go, if people will not be healthy, they will not thrive. And so if we work towards making them healthy, if we work towards ensuring that their families are healthy, them as mothers are healthy, their families are healthy, then they will be able to thrive in each and every aspect of their life. And I must say that in many places and in many instances, it's not something that will happen overnight. It's not something that will happen fast or rapidly. But if we are consistent, if we are committed and completely given into the cause, we will be able to achieve. And I think at the end of the day, we will be able to look back and see that we have impacted. I will just give a personal example. When I look back and I walk in many places and find some of the children that I treated and put on antiretroviral treatment probably 17 years ago and see them now developing into adults, that for me is something that tells me I should continue to do this. If probably I didn't do that work 17 years ago, maybe those children wouldn't be here. But here they are. They've been able to live their lives thus far, and they are also continuing to live. And I think if many of us are doing that in our small ways in the different places, we will continue impacting the lives of many people.
It has been an enormous privilege and delight to be able to talk to you. Incredibly important and inspiring work. And for that, we thank you both to the contribution to Uganda, but also in the many other countries in which you work.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation, please visit chwy.jnj.com. Once more, chwy.jnj.com. And for more information on The Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.